Chapter the 14th. I needed to be exceedingly careful, that is to say, most thoroughly disguised, for I needed to venture where I knew I should not, where I risked being recognized. And what if, after all, I could not find... No what ifs, Enola. Just get dressed. Easier said than done. The role I needed to take on was that of lady, requiring a handkerchief linen camisole and drawers to protect me from my own corset, then the corset itself. Not straight-laced, of course, but necessary to support the various improvers, regulators, and enhancers that would carry my supplies, whilst providing me with the requisite hourglass figure. Then a soft cover over the corset's hard-corded cotton and steel, then several silk petticoats, plus the dress itself. A semi-bustled and pleated lapis-blue promenade dress with jacket, suitable for shopping, and its matching hat, embroidered handkerchief, gloves, gaiters, and parasol. Perhaps 15 pounds of clothing, not counting my best boots. But that was not all. In addition to being a lady, today I needed to be beautiful, as this was the guise in which I was least likely to be recognized as Enola. So I had to take my own hair, which, like the rest of me, most unfortunately attests kinship with my brother Sherlock, being of the same dull and indeterminate tree-trunk hue as his. I had to yank my hair to the top of my head and pin it there, then hide it under my ever-so-luxuriant chestnut wig, into the coif of which I had incorporated and fastened my hat. Also, I put a fringe of curls across my forehead, de rigueur, as Princess Alexandra wore them, and I applied various disreputable substances to my lips, cheeks, eyelids, and eyelashes as subtly as I could. After much practice, and perhaps because the blood of the Vernets runs in my veins, I am able, I think and hope, to paint my face in such a way that my art is taken for nature's own. Then, and only then, was I ready. Mid-afternoon, and still I had not eaten, but there was no time to do so, for my best chance, not a very good chance at all, considering that there were approximately 20,000 cabs in London, confound my dolichocephalic head that I could not remember the identifying number of the one cab I sought. Still, cab drivers waited for their fares at the same cab stands day after day, so I would begin my search at the same place and hour I had formerly seen him. One person who might know where Lady Cecily was, the cabby who conveyed her shopping for her trousseau and then, presumably, home. I would look for him outside the Oxford Street Ladies' Lavatory, which was, most unfortunately, the same place where my brother Mycroft was likely to be looking for me. Perambulate, I reminded myself as I descended from my own conveyance. Mince along with itty-bitty birdie steps, twirl your parasol. You're a beautiful lady, all dressed up to go shopping. Off I sailed, thus, graciously, like a heavenly blue ship amid London's sooty maelstrom. Soldiers, scullery maids, clerks and clerics, a blind beggar led by a barefoot child, a one-armed greybeard with his Victoria's Cross prominently displayed, a fuzzy-haired slum woman selling corn plasters, gentlemen tipping their top hats, paper boys dotted red with skin eruptions, a ragged little girl hoarse from selling apples, an inky scholar with shoulders narrow, sloped and lopsided from carrying books. Such was the grimy, motley crowd through which I strolled as if through a meadow of dark daisies. At a genteel gait I approached the cab stand, scanning its ranks, while appearing, I hoped, only to gaze about me with idle superiority. I had no idea how I was going to find the cab I wanted, for I had not seen the driver's face, and I had no clear memory of the vehicle itself. They all looked so much the same. On the way hither I had taken pencil and paper in hand, attempting a sketch, but had produced only a blur, except for the horse, which came out rather nice. I adore horses. So there I sat like a child, drawing a picture of black beauty. Really, Enola. Disappointed in myself, I thought that perhaps when I arrived on the spot I might recognize the cab, if it were there. Too many perhapses, mights, and ifs. I saw nothing at all familiar among the ranks of cabs. On a nearby pavement, however, directly in my path, stood a pair of figures all too familiar to me. My brothers, Mycroft and Sherlock. I am ashamed to say that the sight of them sent my mental faculties, along with my heartbeat, into temporary abeyance. I halted. But then, as often happens at such moments, my mother's voice chided from within my own mind. "Nonsense, Enola. You will do very well on your own." The oft-spoken, well-remembered words starched my spine. Collecting my wits, I started walking again. Luckily, engrossed in what appeared to be a most animated conversation, Sherlock and Mycroft had not yet observed me. They stood approximately at the place where I had previously encountered, and booted, Mycroft. Dressed much as he had been that day, that robust gentleman appeared unharmed by the experience. Sherlock, however, while impeccable in his black broadcloth city suit, wore upon his right foot a carpet slipper and leaned heavily upon a cane. Carefully in control of my pace and bearing, I sidled along, head up, hat fetchingly cocked, parasol aloft, making sure that I stood out like a blue beacon among the throng, a beautiful lady who wants the whole world to give her its covert glance, so as not to be seen. How ironic to conceal oneself by being looked at! But there it was. My brothers had no interest in women. Observing a paragon of fashionable feminine pulchritude approaching, they would give her not a second glance. And so it proved. As I passed them, like automatons, they touched their hat brims without pausing in their conversation.
"Cannot be allowed to go on," Mycroft was saying in his usual pompous manner. "You are much remiss, Sherlock, to let her go blithely on her errant way."
"I beg to differ. She seemed far from blithe." Indeed, my distress had showed, apparently, although what point Sherlock was trying to make I know not, for I heard no more, continuing on my errant way. And disciplining my mind to focus on the task at hand, trying to find the cab in which Lady Cecily had disappeared. But I still did not recognize anything familiar in the ranks before me. Nearly at the end of the cab stand, and out of sight of my brothers, I halted, took a deep breath, and turned to survey the scene one more time. Without any pleasing result, except that I found the humble brown gaze of a cab horse looking back at me. A big, placid dun horse. On impulse, for his was the most honest greeting I had received in many a day, I stepped to his head and patted his cheekbone with my silk-gloved hand. With a hay-scented snort of approval, he lowered his head so that I could rub his forelock. Sitting on his box, the cab driver put aside his reading material, it appeared to be the Illustrated Crime Gazetteer, and eyed me uncertainly. "What a sweet horse," I remarked, finding it a pleasure to speak naturally in my own aristocratic accent. "So good-tempered, and willing, is he not?"
"That he is, m'lady. Hard worker and an easy keeper."
Warming to the topic, the cab driver leaned towards me.
"The best I ever had, and a great good fortune to a hindependent such an as me."
He owned his horse and cab, he meant, rather than driving for a cab company, and while he kept his income, he also took his risks. A lame horse could ruin him. Smoothing the dun horse's black mane, I nodded. "He's as sturdy as a brick, isn't he? What's his name?"
"Why, he's a she, m'lady, and her name is Pet."
My smile widened. Pet snorted softly and nosed my skirt as if she might locate a treat in one of my pockets.
"You're an uncommon good judge of horses, m'lady, if you don't mind me saying so,"
the cabbie added.
"Most of the ladies favours the fancy equipages with hackneys."
"Yes, I saw one of those the other day." Eureka! Suddenly, in that relaxed and idle moment, I'd remembered. "An over-large four-wheeler all smeared with polish," I said with unfeigned enthusiastic disapproval. "And the horse wasn't a hackney, but something of the sort, racy and high-headed, foaming at the bit, black with white feet all feathered like a Clydesdale's.
I know the one. Very flashy action, knees up to his nose. A lot of wasted wear and tear, if you ask me. That's Paddy Murphy and his gypsy horse.
Really? Giving Pet a final pat, I walked a few steps and climbed into the man's cab, handing him a nice shiny sum of money in advance in order to forestall hesitation or questions. Do you think you could find this Murphy person and take me to him? I must speak with him.